Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to menstrual mentor, Kitty Maguire.
It's like, no, we don't need a healthy, vital menstrual cycle just because we want to have a baby. We need it to function and to be a thriving woman in society so that we are able to show up for our families, our community. Because, again, not all women want kids. And I think that part needs to be really honoured and celebrated. And, like, we need those women.
For sure.
You know, yeah. So... Even the pressure of the menstrual cycle just being as if it's just this thing for baby making. It's our sanity, it's our creative power, it's knowing when to lean in and when to lean out. And I think that's a lot of us have been conditioned to constantly lean in, constantly give.
Kitty lives in Dublin with her partner Sam, her two nephews, their dog Winnie Wagtail and Bertie the cat. She has pioneered menstruality work in Ireland for almost 10 years now, providing therapeutic sessions, rituals and circles for women, girls and people who want to nurture a healthier embodied connection to their womb and cycles. And she also recently featured in Richie Sadler's brilliant documentary Let's Talk About Sex on RTE. Kitty's mother, playwright Jo Egan, was a highly respected and influential figure in the Northern Ireland art scene. And last Christmas, she died, which came as a huge shock to all who knew and loved her. At the time of her death, she had a project in development with the Abbey Theatre in Dublin. And during this conversation, Kitty speaks about her mam and shares how she's been navigating life since her passing. She also speaks about her own work, the importance of healing, and she gives us an overview of the menstrual cycle. Here it is. An obvious place to start is when I reached out to have a conversation with you today.
Yeah.
You responded in such a beautiful way that I was not expecting.
Yeah.
So today is the 5th of October. But for you, it's an important day.
Yeah. God, the emotions just flowed through me there. Yeah, so, yeah, it's my mother's birthday. It's my mother's 63rd birthday. So, happy birthday, Mom.
Yeah. I know this is very difficult for you, but I also know it's something that you want to talk about. You want to talk about her and honour her. And she is very much a part of your life each and every day. She's with you. Can we talk about her?
Yeah, I think for me at this stage of the grief process, which is very early days, it's kind of a must. And if people don't bring her up, I bring her up. I mean, I've got a necklace of her, of my mother on me now. And that's for people to be like, oh, your mom, or if I haven't seen you since she died. I'm like, thank you. And it is that thing of, you're not going to upset me by bringing her up.
You want to talk about her.
Well, we're upset.
Yeah.
You know, we're anyone who's lost a special person and someone they love greatly, like, we're not like switching it on and off. Like, it lives with us. It's part of our life now. So I think to have pockets of people sending you photos, any little piece of them, you know, even today, one of my mum's good friends, Ursula, sent me a stunning photo, and straight away I sent that into the family WhatsApp. And it's just more, because you look at photos, videos like that with her, I'll get to that, like the podcast I found on her last week.
Yeah.
It's legacy. And we're lucky that, you know, as much as phones and all these things are to our detriment at times, I'm so grateful that I'm always taking photos, videos. Like, I've so many beautiful moments and funny moments. And like, my mom was very funny and bold and brave. And we have those moments because her grandchildren were her like, she speaks about them anytime you'd hear her speak. Yeah. They're in any interview, because she had her own brilliance and successes out there. So she always brought, like, her children, she loved us, but there was nothing like her grandchildren, you know. So, yeah, it's very, my birthday was 5 days ago, so it's always very
intense.
Well, we've always, yeah, like, she was only 19 when I was born, and then 5 days later turned 20. So I've had big birthdays with her. We had our 20th and her 40th together.
Yeah.
My 40th, her 60th together. So I always visioned us growing up. You know, we grew up watching the Golden Girls. And if you think Sophia and Dorothy
yeah.
Like, they practically looked the same age.
Yeah.
I used to think, aren't we so lucky to have such a young, like, the, whereas it was tricky when we were younger to have a very young mom because of the prejudice that came with that, and we'll get into that later, I'm sure, as well, of growing up in Ireland. And, you know, it was 1980 when I was born. So, but then the benefits of Granny Jo still being able to jump on a fun slide in and jump on like amusement parks,
yeah,
and roll around the floor with the kids, and in football matches, you know, like, she was just full of beans. And I kind of felt, as I'm 43 now, and as I was getting older, she was getting younger. So we were kind of all becoming the same age, you know, because some of my friends are close to her age, and she worked in the arts, so sure, she'd friends of all ages. So it's so hard for me to speak about her as if she's died. I'm just like, and it is that thing of loss. I'm like, she's not lost. It's weird. It's such a, for me, the whole year has just felt like I'm constantly walking into my room, a room looking for keys. Like, I don't drive, so like, I don't. But there's just this void in my system. And, you know, even like, I didn't have this, it's been really interesting to see this journey as well. Like, since I speak about my mom quite openly and in my work, because they're not separate.
Yeah,
like, I feel it's a disservice to me to pretend that, no, it's hell. It's some days I am inconsolable. Some days, like, your heart is just, you know, it's outside your body being dragged and thumped around the place. And other days I'm really grateful for dissociation. So I can just say, I think I'll, thank God my system has decided to park that today, because I can't feel like this every single day. So it is just, I'm so, I suppose, aware of stress responses, trauma responses, my nervous system responses, and from the work that I do. So in one way, it's been like, I'm lucky, I'm so resourced. It's just very unfortunate I have to be resourced for such a tragic loss, and such a loss too soon.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I am deeply sorry. I don't know how you're feeling. I haven't been through that
Thank
type
you.
Of loss. So I'm not going to patronize you by saying that I get it. I don't. And I don't think anyone, unless they've been through it, can get it. But it's not just, you know, the passing of a parent. It's also in the manner in which she left this world. Of all the days in the year.
I know.
And I'm only doing this because you said you were okay to talk about it. But can you bring us back to Christmas Eve last year?
Yeah. So, and I, it is important for myself that I can say this because of the nature of the accident. You know, there's a lot of people don't know and they're not going to text you and ask you. So I just kind of feel, well, now they'll know. So I am grateful to have to be able to do it this way. And thanks for just being so gifted at holding this space, Sheila. You know, like I really love how you do this. So thank you. And I mean that. But so last Christmas, my partner, Sam, and I and my in-laws, the Als, Alison and Alan, we're over there, Australians, they are over to visit us for a couple of months. And I have my nephews that live with us. Myself and Sam are their full-time carers. They are a four-year-old and a nine-year-old, and they're brilliant. They're so at the beginning of the year, before the lads were replaced with us, we planned a little trip up to the Wicklow Mountains just for something different. And so we were really excited about that. And Mam, in the last couple of years, had mostly spent Christmas with myself and Sam. And so the tradition on Christmas Eve was to get over to the boys, her grandsons, and put the carrot and the Santa bits and bobs and just see the sisters. And Mam is very much so, she always liked to, you know, she couldn't buy something for one and then not the other. So like she was really into her family, you know. She was her life was so remarkable. Like my elder sister said that, looking back, how did she make so much time for us? And you wouldn't know that she was, you know, writing monumental pieces of theatre in Irish history, you know.
Yeah.
Because to us, she's our mam, our mammy. So she was coming up to us on Christmas Eve, and we were really excited about that. So we were having this lovely, wholesome family Christmas. Sam's cousin had come over with her two kids from Paris. And then my sister had recently moved to Malahide. So Mam was wanting to help her have her Christmas, her lovely first Christmas. And I'd been saying to my mam, I just don't feel like I want you driving up on Christmas Eve. I don't feel happy about it. And Sam and I, we were saying, look, those roads can be a bit, and I'd done retreats and stuff up there, so we knew them. And my mam lived she lived in Belfast, but last year had moved to the west of Ireland. And she was like, I'm used to the roads. And at night time, I said, you're not used to those roads though, mam. So I just had this horrible, I just kept saying, it just doesn't sit with me, mam. And I'm just feeling nervous. And she was like, grand. Now, she was just, she did what she wanted. She was like a very strong, focused, decisive woman, you know?
Yeah.
So my sister was the same. They were like, don't drive up, go on, you can stay. And I said to her, sure, you'll have Christmas morning there with my sister's son. And, but she and her friends had said that to me, but she was excited to get up and have the rest, you know, like my mom and Sam could chat into all hours. They both work in the arts and they're both writers. And so, you know, there was no end. And then she was excited to come up and see, she gets on like a house on fire with Sam's mom. Like they're real strong women that do great things in the community, you know. And and Sam's dad as well. She was so, just so fond, and she just loved spending time. Anyway, she left, I think, she rang me and I was like, you better have your bum on the road. You know, we were having a bit, we'd load a banter. And she's like, I'm coming. And I put her onto the phone to Sam for directions. And then I was like, well, we'll have a whiskey here when you get here. And we're sitting up and sure, we were doing all our presents and the kids were going to bed and we'd left out all the Santa stuff. And then, so I didn't contact her again. And that was at about maybe 10-ish after 10. And so she'd had a great day. She'd been over with my other sister as well and her children. And anyway, the time was ticking on. And because it was Christmas Eve and I was like, oh, there's nobody going to be on the roads. And I'd done all our bits and bobs and sure, all our Christmas dinner. And then I messaged her and I just was like, are you okay? Like, and I didn't want to be distracting her on the phone on the road. And then Sam's parents went to bed and then Sam and I were sitting up. And then Sam was ringing her and ringing her and ringing her. And then I just said, I'm just going to ring the Garda station and see if there's been anything that's happened. And the guards were, my mum's surname is Egan and mine is Maguire. That's my mother's maiden name. And so I rang, because of the location, we were quite on the far side of Wicklow. So I'd rang one of the guards and they were like, no, nothing's been said. And I said, well, look, will you call us back? And I said, has there been any accident? I said, it's just very strange that we haven't heard from her. But I thought if something else happened and her phone was in the car, but then I was like, she would have called on someone else's phone. Anyway, somebody called me back and said, oh, can you tell us some details? And so we did. And the door knocked and they said, look, we'll call up and see you. And it was the guard. And I think my soul knew before, because I just felt my heart just drop into my ankles. And we just walked into the kitchen and he just said, look, I'm really sorry, but there has been an accident and there was a woman, a car accident, and there's a woman that fits the age description of your mother. And he just took out her driving license. And that was it. And Sam was just, it was just me and Sam there in that moment. And Sam was just stunned. And I just said straight away, like, no, like, and obviously you couldn't scream the house down because it's children are in bed. And I just said, I'm not ready not to have a mother. I was just like, no way. Like, I was just, this is not happening. So I was, the panic was just, it was like watching exactly what you'd see in a film. And that's what I feel I've watched. And then Sam and I sat, and then Sam's parents came down and we just hugged and held each other and cried. And then we just had to, then I had to ring my sisters and my auntie. And I felt like I can't have heard of anyone else tell them. But it was pretty insane, because then we all had to go and do Christmas morning. And but I will just say, like, that I think the hardship about that is that, like, as kids, Christmas Eve was so magic. It's just the shockingness of it that, like, even though, like, Sam and I didn't have kids in our home, like myself, Mam and Sam, like, we still always had great magic at Christmas and crack, and we'd ring Australia on Christmas Eve because it'd be Christmas morning there. But there was just such fun in the years that we did, like especially the last couple of years. So for us as a family, like, I think it is possible. I don't think there's a worse day, because if it had been my birthday, that's my day. But the fact that, we're like, I'm determined now not to let it. She'd be raging if she thought Christmas was ruined forever now, because, you know, it was such a magical time. But I think that was the hard thing, is that, obviously it's hard, but for us then, when the Garda came, I was like, well, what happened? And he just said, there was another driver there in hospital now. So since then, I won't go too into it, but, you know, the driver survived, and they have been charged with dangerous driving, causing death. So we're now, this is the other, like, in a typical death or like illness, or but this is an ongoing court case as well. So like, you know, this
you've got to deal with as well
on top of it. So it's I feel like, and I said that for months, I just feel like I've watched a horrible movie, and it's really, and I can't watch horror movies because of I'm just a bit of a scaredy cat. But yeah, it is. It's just on my system. It feels like, because I don't feel like she's gone. Like you constantly go to tell her something. Like when Sinead O'Connor died, I burst into tears and I straight went to call my mom because, you know, yeah, my mum was a beautiful singer, and she, like, I remember her singing Nothing Compares to You. But I really wanted, like, she'd have been raging because Sinead was such, my sister's called Sinead as well, but Sinead was such a, my mum was a real, like, advocate for her. And,
yeah.
You know,
and
just knew because some of, you know, Sinead was a feisty woman in Irish, and my mum was too. So truth speaking, women are often, you know, pinpointed and targeted and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they don't get the
recognition.
But like my mom and Sinead, by God, they get it at death. So it is, it's, we're completely in shock. I mean, I can't speak for the whole family, but we're doing our best just to, for me, it's like, this can't be the collapse of me.
Yeah.
I refuse to let it destroy me. And I know my sisters, like, we've so much to live for and we've so much to look forward to. There's so much great stuff ahead for us all. And she was a real champion of that. And all our, you know, she was a creative. So anything, she was just so proud and supportive. So, I'm great, very grateful to have my sisters, you know. It's very sad, but we miss her deeply.
And you're honouring her by navigating life the way you are, by speaking about her the way you are, and by wanting to enjoy life as well, because, as you said, that's what she would have.
And we do find laughter, like even the other day, for my birthday, like I genuinely had a happy birthday. And I was, last week I was a mess. Sure, when you messaged me, I'd woken up that morning and I really needed to hear her, because the 24th of every month, naturally enough, it just kind of grabs me by the ears and knocks me all over the place.
Yeah.
But I woke up, I was more so shook on Sunday or last Monday, which was the 25th. And I said, I need to hear her. And I said, geez, I wonder, is she on a podcast? So I found a podcast and it was 33 minutes long. And I was like, oh my, how lucky am I that I can find my mom's voice? Whereas some people won't have that. And I, like, it's lucky in these horrific situations. But, and the podcast was pretty intense because she obviously, her work could be really intense at times. And, you know, so, and the project particularly that she was working on, but that's why it was so kind of magic last week when I listened to that podcast, and I'd been that weekend, because I have my own podcast coming up, and I'd done out a list and I'd put you on as a guest, as for a spiritualist guest and under spirituality. And then the next day I was listening to the podcast again, and I had other people, like, you know, Richie and different womb workers, but I wanted, like, people who turn their pain into purpose, because I want it to be about legacy, because this is what, as I was listening to this podcast, it gets clearer to me my purpose. And then I was sitting there, and Mary Kennedy, my good friend, had sent me this love, because I sent her the podcast and she listened to it, and she was just, you know, mirroring a few things back to me in it, and I was crying and she was crying. And then your message came in, and I just looked at my mom and I said, I know. And I knew it was you messaging me, because then I put on my put down Sheila. I also said, I'd like to go on Sheila's podcast.
Wow.
Because I know. And then I I listened to your thing and I just, that's why I messaged you back straight away. And I was like, I need you to hear this as raw as I am, because, you know, there, it was spidey senses. It was, yeah. And I said,
because it wasn't just that and what you had written down and what you were, I suppose, manifesting.
It's the date.
And I would have obviously had no idea.
So I just felt like in January, you know, I had to cancel and pull back from a lot of work. And my mother was a real champion of my work, you know, which I'm very lucky because I'm blessed, I should, like, in the fact that I have such a supportive family. Because look, what I'm doing in the world is, to other families, especially in Irish families, would be a bit like, oh, it's a bit awkward, isn't it? Or a bit uncomfortable, or just mortification around it. But she always told me how proud she was, and, you know, she'd be buying me funny little knitted wombs or earrings that looked like vulvas or cool things. And we'll get to that wife, you probably know. But it was just really poignant. And I felt at the beginning of the year, I just said to her, "Mom, will you just make it easier for me this year? Like, just, if anything, if there's any way you can help make work just opportunity and ease." And it's funny because I remember when my sister was, we had a mother blessing for her when she was due her youngest boy. We had this big cauldron, and I think a friend had gifted me cacao. My mother stirred in for my sister ease, as much ease in your birth as possible.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's actually lovely, you know, like, to think it's not going to be easy, but for it to have ease at times. And so I always hear that, really stuck with me. And I think she was a woman that strived a lot, and there wasn't ease, you know, she had us so young and life was very, was tricky and hard. But so I feel it's been quite poignant, the fact that I was on last Monday morning in bed crying, thinking of her legacy. And then I was getting all nostalgic, going, well, God, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if I can create that through my work? And then later on, you just messaged. So I just give her, I give her these nods. And for me, Sheila, like, I think obviously since she's died, I have to believe in, like, I've always had, not always, I've had such a, I found a spiritual practice that works for me the last, whatever, 10, 12, I don't know, whatever, so many years. And now I have to believe, because I have to believe there are signs from her, because it's not good enough or enough for me to think that's it now. Are you dying? You never see them or feel. So I'm not thinking that there's, she's sitting up there on a cloud with God and Sinead O'Connor smoking fags. I mean, I'd love to think that happened, but like, I believe in spirit, and I feel like it's an energy. Mm. And I feel, you know, the morning, Christmas morning, I was in bed and our little four-year-old man came running in for hugs and kisses because, you know, he could see I was crying. And this black moth flew in, and I thought it was just this black moth. And sure, this is, if you think, Christmas Day, so winter solstice time, so animals are in hibernation. But actually, as I opened up this big window, the moth turned into a big red admiral butterfly, and it opened its wings in the window. And my whole system just went whoosh, because when we were kids, my granddad's house down the west of Ireland, Ross Hill, which is my mom's house now, and there's red admirals all over the house. And granddad used to always talk, my mom's dad, Paddy, would always talk about red admirals. And I've never seen a red admiral or a small tortoise butterfly, or there's a couple of different butterflies. And even the kids now, like, they're just, like, they're everywhere, you know. They're, and I'd be with friends and they'll go, oh, here's Joe, you know. And but it's been amazing. So for us to kind of, and I know for some, they're like, oh, how cliche, a robin or a butterfly. And it's like, yeah, but it was Christmas morning, flew into the, where, like, it wasn't there the whole time, and it obviously was there, but I just opened the window.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I know you're here to tell me that you want to check up. And I just opened the window and I said, ma'am, you have to go. And I said, I need you to cross over. Like, whatever, I need you to, we will never be the same, but we will be okay. And I was like, I can't, like, I need, because I could feel my biggest fear was my mum's last moments, which I'm hopeful that she didn't know, because I think it was so quick and so sudden to have had any thought of my girls, Kitty's waiting up for me, Kitty and Sam. That's why I lie awake at night going, like, I just hope she didn't know. And I think for me to just have that comfort in this little butterfly that just came in, and I just said, I know you're worried. And I was like, we have each other. And one night when we were on the couch in my sitting room, like, we'd have a lot of debates, you know, we're very feisty, there were a lot of similar qualities and hot-headedness and big fire energy would be, and we were talking about something. And I think she's legacy came up and she said, my biggest hope is if I ever did go, is that you girls have each other. And I just said, and I said, and we will. And I said, and if anything ever, and that was only like this time last year. And I was like, if anything ever did, I said, we do have each other, ma'am. Like, just because she just was like, always saying, we used to get annoyed. She'd be saying, no, look after her, or like, and I was like, she asked, is she checking in on you, telling you to look after me? And she did, because, you know, it was tricky at times. You know, she was a young mum. So I suppose my mum always felt like she'd stuff to make up for. And then I suppose I can see now, and I think anyone, then when you do start rearing kids, you're like, oh God, it's hard. And for her to have been, she was 15, her first, 17, 19, and then 24 and her fourth, for what she exposed us to as young children, and food wise, and, you know, like, it's, when I look back, it was, I'm 43 and I'd struggle to cook a homemade meal every night, whereas nutrition and culture and arts, and like, she exposed us to amazing stuff, even though we lived in, you know, a working class estate in Baldoyle, you know, growing up. But there was a lot of magic, a lot of love, like, lots of chaos. And but I do think she felt she had a lot that she could have done more of this. Whereas I think looking back, yeah, we can pull our childhoods apart. But then we all realise as we get older, every family has their challenges.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And I think for me, if anything, it's just seeing family is number one, and yeah, and our people are close, and our close people are our family as well. So this year my world has definitely got very small, and your clan just wrapped in around you, and like, so it's a precious time as well, and how we just kind of are showing up for each other, or just being kinder and understanding to each other in our grief process, because everyone, I think that's the thing, in families navigates it different. So yeah, I'm grateful for the little sparks of magic, because they do just give me that sense of connection. So I'm here today.
Thank you so much for sharing and letting us get a sense of who she was, and you know, her spirit is very much still here. You're still so raw. It's still such early days of your grief, and I don't want to be insensitive now by kind of shifting into the work you do, but the thing is, I suppose it's so intertwined.
Yeah.
And your mum was really proud of what you were doing and what you do and continue to do. So for those listening, and plenty of people listening will be familiar with your work and be probably like me, admiring it. Maybe they've done different courses, but you do so much. And I think, I suppose really what I would love is if we could distill it down and talk about the essence of what you do, which is looking at our monthly cycle. Mm. So before we get into that, I suppose, could you give us an overview of Red Alchemy? Because I know you've lots of different branches and different elements and different things you're exploring, and educational empowerment is at its core.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely grown its own legs since. I suppose at the heart of it is Red Alchemy is turning your pain into purpose. And what that might look like for some people is menstrual disorders, womb trauma, womb stories, and befriending their womb, befriending their body. I mainly focus on the menstrual cycle at the moment. I do, like, I work with in menstruality, which represents the full spectrum of womanhood, which would be the menarche years, our first bleed years, the menstrual years, so that would cover all pregnancy and postnatal, and then the menopausal years, and then the mature years. So menstruality is a word that represents the full spectrum of womanhood. So I did have to niche down, and because it's where I was at in my life as well, and I was, you know, like focusing on my fertility. And I suppose I was looking at our biology, so my hormones, my nervous system, lymphatic system, digestive system, all the systems. And that's one part. And that there, that's all really, really important. And mostly we go to an external body for that, like an endocrinologist, or, you know, if we don't know anything about it, or like you'd hit like Google or something, and you'd probably, people would tap into a bit there. And then the other part, so it's quite a comprehensive through a holistic lens. So it really is that body, mind, spirit. Then we've got the educational side there. And then it's going into the spirit and the sacred. So the spiritual side of it would be, for me, for people who are who find that word spiritual or spirituality tricky, for me, spirituality is nature. It's life. It's all encompassing. It's everything. So nature cycles. You know, and the menstrual cycle is a like menstruation is a highly shamanic time in our, and we're very, very, very connected to the spirit world in that time. But a lot of us, that's just been numbed, repressed, or shamed, or just silenced in the body. So then that's the spirit side. And then the sacred side is the ritual and the ceremony. So, you know, say, for example, you know, women like us here, I can hold space and ceremonies for you to revisit your first bleed and reframe that.
Wow.
Because, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that, was that a tricky time? Or was that a big time?
It was a tricky time.
Yeah, I could really feel that. So... Exactly. So Sheila, here you
are. I was scared.
Yeah.
Scared.
And this is the thing. It's, you know, I'll quote my mother here. It's like people say you can't change the past, but you can. You can change the moral perspective on the past. That's what happens when people speak. And that's a piece from one of my mother's The Crack and Everything piece that she did. And that's what I feel. When I read that, I went, that's what we're doing here. Because by you speaking and reframing and revisiting menarch at whatever stage of your life, like even women that go, like I've held space for women going through hysterectomy or losing their cycle due to cancer or different illnesses, and losing their cycle suddenly because, and then the grief of like, my cycle, no, I'm not ready to leave my menstrual years and be thrown into spontaneous menopause. We can go at any stage of life and revisit that and reframe it. And if there's wounding around there, it's turn it into in the experience you dreamed of, and that your little self would have craved. And this is the thing in society, we're really focused on nowadays on the inner child, and then it's like then it's self-love, but that adolescence has kind of been forgotten about. So it's like, well, Jesus, if you've done your inner child work, wait and you meet your inner adolescence because she's raging, you know,
yeah,
or she's afraid or she's, you know, she's met parts of herself that were silenced, or like she really learned the fawn response at like how to become this good girl. So that's a huge part. And just to I'll credit there that like I've done that training with Red School, a beautiful process. So, you know, I would have done a bit of work with Red School, as there would be quite prominent in the world of menstruality. And then I've kind of brought my own mark on it and weaving in a lot of Irish spirituality, because I love doing healing on Irish lands as an Irish woman, whereas for me, I've had to leave Ireland often to find my mentors, my teachers.
Yeah.
So for me to be able to be a mentor in Ireland to people who want to do their healing on Irish soil, because, you know, the womb in Ireland is really has been colonized and it's been traumatized and it's been repressed and it hasn't been honored. So, and to think like there's Newgrange, what's Newgrange? It's a womb, you know, it's this big winter dark womb. And it's, you know, it's so powerful. Like Ireland back in the day, our ancestors, they just got it. They were like the, and then Ishnok people say like, it's the belly button. I'm like, I don't think of it as a belly button. I'm like, it's the umbilical cord. It's what's a belly button, you know, it's this divine connection, like, but it's the mother energy connected out to the children. It's so powerful. So we're weaving in all these elements so that, yes, the people that are coming who are the brain boxes, and they're like, they want all the info and they're in their head. It's like, well, yeah, you can get that. That's knowledge. And that knowledge is really important, because then you can learn when your estrogen should be here or should be balanced. And, you know, this is the signs of imbalanced progesterone, or you know, this is too much stress in our body. Like, that's great. But the missing piece, which I see mostly, is the sacred part or the spiritual side of it, because people will be a bit like, that's a bit weird, because that's being...
Are we still like that, do you think?
Yeah.
Are we?
My God, yeah. People think I kind of laugh at it now, because I'm like, well, I'm quite happy and content in my body and my life. But before this work, I wasn't. And, you know, for me, what's been coming up massively with Red Alchemy, because it started with just women. Now it's in schools, and now myself and the dog are doing like storytelling for first periods and stuff like that for 6-year-olds. But it's for me, as Red Alchemy has progressed, I was noticing a lot of women were coming to me going, I healed my relationship with my mother is better. My relationship with my sisters, my woman wound. I had so much jealousy to other women, because in society, we've had we haven't had a healthy model of go women, and women are great, and let's honor women.
Yeah.
Like, we're really trying to pull that in now, but like, you know, our grannies definitely didn't, and their grannies definitely didn't have it. So what I'm seeing in this work, it's huge healing of the feminine. And it has women that, like, women, we can't sit around blaming this on men, because they haven't been modeled it either. But we're not modeled it as women. And women, we're competing with each other. We're slagging her for laughing at her for this. Or, you know, like, even I can see it in being in very spiritual circles. And we've had to catch ourselves in it, you know, the judgment of, they're not doing the work, you know, this kind of conversation, or
right,
people like that are, you know, whereas then people like in my neck of the woods are probably being slagged for being like, hate these kind of words, like woke and woo-woo, whereas like, I wouldn't put myself anywhere near words. I'm just someone that's just navigating life, trying to make peace with the traumas or stresses or challenges that you've met along the way. So for definitely what Red Alchemy primarily is, a befriending of your body, and befriending of the cycle, but through the whole spectrum, through the anatomy and physiology, your own biology, cycle awareness, and that's like menstrual cycle awareness, seasonal cycle awareness, moon cycle awareness. So just starting to become aware of that. I'm impacted by the full moon, you know, let's use that. Everyone knows about the full moon. Or like I'm really impacted when I'm like when I ovulate, like typically, you know, the typical archetypal explanation for ovulation would be to tell women to get going and get busy, get out there, lift your best weight, like that's when you've got the most strength, and run your fastest marathon. Whereas for me, I'm a bit like, no, that's we actually need a nice quiet time there, because that's just going into excessive doing again. And it's like going run for hell for leather in this window, because you've got these hormones, so it's kind of that are giving you, allowing for a bit more, but it's like, no, we can't jam everything into this tiny window. So it's kind of realistically, like, I, you know, I've spoke about this, is women that have kids, and then there's women who don't have, or people who care for kids or mothers, or, and then there's people that don't have children for whatever reason. And I'm going, that's, I used to be that woman that could say, I'm just going to log off work for, you know, I'm going to go out into the nature and I'll do some painting with my menstrual blood. Whereas I have two kids now, like I'm like having a menstrual, like having a bleed. I do just say to the kids now, can I have 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Just give me 10 minutes. And that might be going up, sneaking up to the bed again. Whereas
I know
it's looking at it very and finding your way
sure.
in it. But
and like you did talk about it there, and some people want just the information. And I I'm kind of realizing, am I one of those? Because when I spoke to you about kind of the loose idea of this chat, I kind of saw it as it would be strange not to give time and space and talk about your mom. But also I was thinking, like, well, let's talk about the cycle, and you know let's talk about the phases in the cycle, because I find that it's very informative. While some of us might know it, others might not, or some people have forgotten, and I think it is information that is of value. But as you said, there's so much more than just this is the phase you're in right now or whatever it is. And I certainly know that with my own fertility as well, that when I really started to tune into my own body, you know, I realized that, yeah, on paper, I might be, meant to be ovulating certain days.
Yeah.
But that actually, if I really tune in to what my body is saying to me in terms of my own bodily fluids that actually, no, I'm not actually ovulating then at all. I'm ovulating at 8 or earlier or whatever it might be. And I found that really fascinating. And I realized that actually, we can sometimes be going through our lives, and while we might think we're in tune with our bodies, we're actually quite disconnected
Completely.
Often.
And I was like, I have to, like, it's a battle for me, you know, to be in my body. You know, it's my body knows what it's like to just live disconnected. And I think that's quite a well-known place for people. And then that's safer for a lot of people, because if that's what we've grown up known is like being in a, like, in the fight or flight response, you know, like to rest, like to really, like I teach yin yoga as well, and that's like, some people are like, what does that mean? Well, how many yogas are there? But I'm like, well, it's the yoga that you, it's the stretching part of yoga, and it's really still and stiller, it's quieter. I don't tell people to be still, but it's not like jumping around a mat and getting, like, building up a heat in your body. I can see in my own system, like learning how to, like, just sit and be in the space, giving people their experience, me not making the experience about me or impacting their experience too much, giving just enough so that they don't run out the door because they're so afraid, or so uncomfortable to be left with their nervous system.
Yeah.
Because if you have a lot of anxiety and you're, you know, so I think that's the hard thing. And for me, I'm in this work because lived and learned experience. And like, I would say this a lot, like I lived on my bike and could have been teaching 20 classes a week, Pilates, yoga, ballet, bar, anything. And the only time I sat down was on the seat of my saddle or the toilet seat.
Mm.
I would eat on the go. And I remember going to a naturopath one time, and I was, the train journey nearly finished me off because I had to sit. And then by the time I got there, she was like, "You're like a zombie. What did you do before you got here?" I was like, "Just sat on the train." And she was like, "You are exhausted." Yeah. And I'm exhausted running around teaching everyone how to do yoga, how to relax. So it's really interesting seeing that, that what I was gravitating to. And it's not something that you ever get to the end with. Like, you know, what is good though is that, like, I lived in chronic pain with in my bleed phase and was eating painkillers, whereas now I don't really have pain, and I know just to relax. And
that's incredible.
It is incredible. Yeah, for me, like I could have been sculling a packet of Nurofen, yeah, and all sorts.
And a lot of people listening will have that experience, which is why I think the work you're doing is so important.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so on the cycle, I'll explain this as if it's the first time anyone's heard it. So there's four stages in the menstrual cycle. We've got menstruation, pre-ovulation, ovulation, and pre-menstruum. And they're mapped with seasons and cycles. So winter is menstruation and the new moon. And the waxing energy is spring and the follicular phase, the pre-ovulation phase, and then the full moon energy would be mirrored with summer, and that, like, big energy, big solstice energy. And then the pre-menstruum phase is the waning, that's the luteal phase, the second half of the cycle. And what I would always say to, it's like they mirror each other. So winter mirrors summer and spring mirrors autumn. So say, like, for me, I have a kind of two and a half to three day bleed stage. That's very short. So I have to try and give myself, say, be slow, like, still don't pack out my window in this. And then I say to people I'm working with, look at what you're doing then in summer. That doesn't mean, because you're doing less, like an awful lot less in your bleed phase, your inner winter phase, that you do an awful lot more in summer. Because the more I'm doing this work, the more I'm like, no, like, we can't just pack out one stage of our life. Because if we just leave everything to inner summer, that's really hard. And actually, as I started teaching this work with women and people with a menstrual cycle, I would say, I actually don't feel like I'm invincible and superpowers when I'm ovulating. As someone who was, like, trying for a baby or preparing for a baby and post miscarriage, the year after my miscarriage, ovulation was hell. And it was hell for Sam as well. So you don't, like, there was grief in that because, and I always bring this up with the cycle, with the menstrual cycle, because there are so many people that are waiting for this experience. And also, if you're on antidepressants, you're not going to feel the full expression of your hormones at that time. And loads women are charting their cycle and they're like, I'm just not really getting the big change. And then I'm kind of going, are you on any medication? And it, one, if they say, I'm on the pill, I'm like, well, you're not ovulating, so you're not getting the hormone, like that juiciness that comes with, or like ideally comes with ovulation. So the thing is, it's so personal. Like, this is the beauty of its autonomy. This is what I, for me, the biggest gift of this work is that you don't have to go to other people. And in a time when, you know, everything is so expensive, it's literally just you, your pen, your paper, or like you can put in your app, because the people say, if knowledge is power, I'm like, wisdom is informed choice. Because if you go into a doctor and you are like, here's my data, I've collected myself, it's not in an app, or it's like, you're going, no, I've noticed this. And a lot of people, I see this with a lot of like students, some might have PCOS, they're single, they're not thinking of having a child yet. And the doctor's like, come back when you want a baby. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can't have a woman just walking around with a 56-day cycle. Help her now.
Yeah.
So that the day she does say, I'm ready to conceive. So there's a lot of menstrual disorders and challenges that are just cast off because people aren't ready to have a baby. And it's like, no, we don't need a healthy, vital menstrual cycle just because we want to have a baby. We need it to function to be a thriving woman in society, so that we are able to show up for our families, our community. Because again, not all women want kids. And I think that part needs to be really honored and celebrated. And like, we need those women.
For sure.
You know, yeah. So even the pressure of the menstrual cycle just being as if it's just this thing for baby making. It's our sanity. It's our creative power. It's knowing when to lean in and when to lean out. And I think that's a lot of us have been conditioned to constantly lean in, constantly give. And even a conversation with a friend yesterday who's coming up to 45, who's a real sweetheart, she's saying, I'm even noticing in myself, I'm getting a bit like, ah, fuck off. You know, like, no, I'm not doing. Whereas I was saying, yeah, because we're not in that maiden energy of like, I'll do it. Yeah, me, pick me, you know, like.
I'm laughing because I'm 44 and I feel like I resonate with that too.
Yeah, but like, and that's the beauty of that stage of life is we also need that, because if all women just ran around all the time saying yes to things they didn't really want to, look what mess that's got us into. So I actually, it's harder and we're less likable.
Yeah.
Because we're not people pleasers.
Yeah.
So it is, there's great power in it, because when you do, you're like, I suppose when you look at, older women who are like, give a shit if you like me or not. So what? This is what I'm doing. Suit myself. No, go on now. You know. So we need that, and we have that in our. We know those women, and we also know the burnt out matriarchal woman. You know. So
before we wrap it up, if you were to give any advice for somebody who, because I'm literally moments or hours away from my own period, so. And I sense it's on the way. Advice for this time, because I think that's something that you speak so beautifully about, and that in modern society is ignored and not honoured. Yeah. The space, the time, the sense of retreat that is actually of huge value during your bleed.
I think it's making peace with retreat and... you know, rest is very, very hard for a lot of people. So we can look at different forms of rest, you know, like a nice, gentle, like stroll in the, it's like swapping that big run in the, if you're a runner, for, you know, go for a nice walk in the park, and just conserving your energy. You know, like say today, I'm day six of my cycle. So this is a good time for me. My energy's rising. So like it's easy for me to chat in this stage of my cycle. But if I was about to bleed, I wouldn't talk to anyone. I'd be like, gee, save all that brain to mouth energy for talking to Sheila, you know, because I'm a different beast altogether. Like it's, you know, they say like baby brain, but like there's period brain, because our body's is getting ready to do this really important shedding. And it's a purge and it's a detox. So the body's like, oh God, just lie there. I don't want people to feel like they have to retreat to this cave and, you know, paint their faces with menstrual blood. Like I've done it. It's lovely. But it's finding what is your version.
Yeah. And everyone's different in honoring ourselves.
And there's shame, like there's the shame piece in there as well, Sheila. So it's kind of like, I do have a family culture that, you know, talking about the menstrual cycle was always there. Like menstrual products were always on show. So if you grew up in a household where there was kind of sniggers, or you have a partner who was a bit like, oh, she's on the rag, oh, this one's hormonal, that's shaming. Mm. So you're probably not going to feel like, oh, I'm just going to go up here and lie down for an hour because I'm bleeding. Like that might be met with a few cheeky comments. So it's kind of, it's knowing your audience and going in, figuring it out in your own body first before you start sharing it with your family or your community, so that it is embodied in yourself and that you know what you need, and so that you can have your food prepped, or you can, if you have a supportive partner like that or a housemate, you know, not everyone has a partner. I think it's just, it's retreat on your terms. And I think start very slowly, because any, you know, that like, it's like, I'm going on a diet, I'm not going to eat this, not going to eat that. Like you might last the first half of your cycle, or the second half you're eating it, your horse and everything into you. Like, whereas I think that's the thing. It's slow, steady, bringing in little pieces at a time. So it starts to become part of, it's a lifestyle choice. It's not just one little piece. It's you live your life because it's supporting you. It's making you feel more connected to yourself, happier, your relationships with your friends, your family, your lovers, whatever, they improve. So it's on your own terms. So I always say that if knowledge is power, wisdom is informed choice.
Thank you so much for being here, for sharing so much with us. And I know that if we had another hour to record, we'd easily fill it and then some. And I know that the courses that you do are comprehensive. So you do varying lengths and degrees of what people want to learn. So this is very hard to condense what you do into a short time frame, because obviously I wanted to give the conversation time and space to talk about Joe, and then also to talk about the work that you do, so that it is all so intertwined. But for those listening who want to find you, you can find you online, you're on Instagram, you have your own website. So if you want to give it a shout out there for people.
Yeah, so kittymaguire.com, and then my Instagram, where I share kind of, I suppose I'm most active, and I kind of share the cycle and just different womb supports, and that's Kitty Maguire Menstrual Mentor.
And for somebody who may be listening and like I did at one point during the conversation, really resonated with something you said in a big way and brought me back to a time. If they wanted to connect with you for a session, do you do one-on-one sessions?
I do one-on-ones online. Sure, I've worked with people all over the world. We didn't get into that, but I do like a lot of my one-on-one work mostly would be the pregnancy release work. But I also do hold, and that's like, so say if women are on fertility journeys or they're making peace with abortion, miscarriage, stillbirth, it's to honor what was. And again, their stories in society that are kind of just medicalized. And it's like, no, that's a highly, like death and loss, that really needs ceremony and holding and space, a grief process and permission to grieve. Mm. Whereas, you know, you hear that with loss and like, you know, miscarriages. It was very early on and sure, 1 in 4. I'm like, stop putting us into statistics. You're That's a right. human. That so it is just it's giving people space to go, this is tough and I'm here to support you through that. But I have done Monarch ceremonies online like that. Now it's different because normally when how I do it in a group and it's part of a mentorship. And but when I have done it online, one was with a woman who had had a hysterectomy due to cancer. And it was beautiful because she had no cycle anymore, but she got to reframe it and then gets to say goodbye. And that's actually become a thing that's come in now. Hysterectomies for women are on the up, for young women. So like they might leave the ovaries so that's been something that's been coming into my field as well the last couple of years, is just to honor the womb, because it's such an amazing organ that like just isn't loved or honored. And it's kind of, people only think about it when it comes to babies, but like not one of us would be here without the mighty womb. So I think it's kind of to give people space. And because the womb has been an enemy for some people, like do you speak to somebody with chronic, like the worst endometriosis, tell them, oh, love your womb. They're like, what? But it's looking at the, again, looking at that piece as a whole and coming in body, mind, spirit, so that it's, so that they can find a way in, and it's not your womb's fault. It's not your fault. And let's just create as much love, kindness and compassion in any of those stories, because that's what I'm seeing. There's so much self, you know, like people are blaming themselves, or I did this, or I should have been doing this earlier. And the thing is, what everyone says, I wish I knew this sooner. I wish this was, why wasn't it taught like this in school? Because they didn't know. And we have to stop blaming what we didn't have and look at what we do have now. Mm. And also, it's not just down to the schools. It's the culture of the family. So if we as families are informed, then we feel confident and secure enough to have these tricky conversations about magic blood or what the menstrual cycle is and using the correct anatomical names. And that's it's because then it's us taking responsibility instead of handing it over to the schools. It's like that piece we did, you know, with Richie and stuff. So it's kind of like the schools are getting a bit of the blame, but we're all part of it. So it's like, let's all, like everything, it's like we're all trying to catch up and get informed as much as we can on so many different topics. And I think meet it where you're at. So if you have a 4-year-old at home, like it's starting there, like, and not waiting till they are hitting adolescence. It's because that's too late. Because the shame and they're already, like, we can see that with our 9-year-old, like he'll kind of roll his eyes and go, he's going to be so embarrassed he said that to you when he's older. Whereas the way I would talk about menstruation or sex ed, you're having age appropriate conversations with a 4-year-old, and then that conversation will be slightly different for a 9-year-old as it would for a 14-year-old or a 17-year-old. So
But it's embracing the right level of chat the whole way along. So it's not
age appropriate.
This talk at a certain age. Yeah. Look, I think you are a powerhouse. I think you're such a gift to all of us. It's been a real thrill for me to sit down and talk to you. I feel like I want to book in for a one-on-one session with you as well. So maybe that's a chat we have after. But thank you for your time. And I know we've only scratched the surface. But
Thank you, Sheila.
I think you've also given us so much to think of. And also, I'm deeply sorry for your loss.
Thank you. And just to say that it is, I feel, I didn't get to say that before, that for people that are in the thick of this pain, I used to focus on the generational trauma. Whereas now, and it's generational healing. And I think, you know, how I'm living a parallel process with my mom here, and even in her death, she's still sending me messages and giving me advice. And for people that we can get hooked into the story that we felt defined us. And it's like that quote that my mom said, it's going, we can meet trauma in our life, but we can also meet great healing. Mm. And that's what is for me, like, is such a huge part of my personality and who I am on this planet, is that I can't just look at my mother's death, my menstrual cycle, my miscarriage as these traumatic events that happened in my life. They've shaped me. They've changed me forever. But I get to decide for it to become generational healing or ancestral healing, because I know how to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to share and get the message across. It's like, yeah, we can come from the worst background in the world and the worst pain, but we can
choose.
We can find our way.
Yeah.
And and that's the scary part, is where do you start? But I didn't have a me when I was younger with my womb stories, and I have grief going, oh, maybe I'd have had my baby by now if I'd have met. But even having compassion from, I've helped so many women conceive, I haven't been able to do it for myself. I would have had great shame in that. Yeah, yes, it's coming. She's in there in the post. Mm. But so I think for people who are feeling stuck in the collapse of their grief, their trauma, their pain, you get to turn this into your story of pain into purpose.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
To get in touch with Kitty, you can find her on Instagram or simply go to our website, kittymaguire.com. And if you enjoyed our conversation, please spread the word. You can share it with your friends, your family, or on social media. And you can support what I do in all the usual ways by clicking follow, giving a quick rating, or leaving a little comment. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.